talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am Paul Strolling.
And this is State of the Art.
Welcome all, one and all, as always, brought to you by Breakdown Services. Delighted to have them as our presenting sponsor. It's a special day here in State of the Arts because...
Why is that?
Shall I tell them, Michael, or are you going to tell
them?
It is, in fact, Michael Sterling's birthday, yay! Ladies and gentlemen. Give it up. Yes. It is, and it is our sweet 16, Michael.
It is.
It's our 16th episode. So we're
Can
celebrating two birthdays with two incredible in-studio guests, and I will let you kick off the introductions there, Michael.
Well, thank you. And, you know, before we leave the sponsor area here, we're also pleased to be sponsored in part by PerformingArtsLive.com, who so generously supports our live arts calendar, which will be read later in the program. But in celebration of his first solo CD, The Vegas Sessions, this dynamic young singer from the musical theater stage and formerly Jersey Boys star will debut his new club act at the Magic Castle in Los Angeles on September 15th. And Paul, here's a sampling. You're going to show us a little sampling.
Yes, I am. I'm very excited about this. We're going to do the risque one first?
In 1 second, but okay. I also want to tell you that we have with us in the studio one of my favorite actresses and artistic director of LA's prestigious Seaglass Theater Company, getting ready to open this week of Grapes and Nuts, a satire of John Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath and of Mice and Men. Kimberly Van Leeuwen joins us.
Also with us. Great. Welcome both. And so we kick it off.
We're going to kick it off with a little taste of Eric Bergen.
A one, a two, a three, a four. Blow me a kiss from across the room. Suck me in with your charm. Sit on this while I get a chair. Eat me out of house and home, I don't care. Take it from me, what we have is rare. On your knees to thank heaven above, and blow me a kiss from across the room. Now please bend over on guitar.
Oh, okay.
Just a little
thank
taste.
You.
What a way to kick off our birthday. That's very, very... Eric, how did you come across that song?
You know, it was sitting in a pile of music a couple of years ago, a vocal coach and an accompanist in New York City, a friend of mine named Mike Levine, and it was sitting there, and he said, oh, you should just look at this. And it said, blow me a kiss. And I thought, oh, well, that sounds like a nice... And then he played it for me, and I said, well, that's mine. I'll be using that forever. and I have. It's gotten me kicked out of many auditions, and it's great. I just love the piece so much. It's just great.
Oh, it's hysterical. We want to talk about that. We want to talk about the other tracks that you have on your CD when we come back to you. This the CD.
You're leaving me
is
already.
The Vegas session. Oh yeah, we'll be back.
That's here. It.
Michael and I have to catch
Goodbye.
Up on our week. We
got
to catch up on our week. We have really interesting things to talk about, like toilet paper being stuck to the bottom of your shoe.
Yes, you that's a story.
This is something, but
not
the,
one of my stories.
The CD is The Vegas Sessions, and we're also going to play a little bit more of it as our outro at the end of the show, so please listen into that. But it's a very and great artwork, I should say.
Thank
too.
You.
And I know stuff.
My mother
like
did
this.
It. No.
Did she?
No.
Oh,
but
yeah.
She does.
Aaron,
she just did
wait,
do it.
Oh, the name of the album is Please Call. Yes. They never call, you know. They never call. So, Michael, how was your how was your before we get back to Eric and then subsequently to the lovely and talented Kimberly Van Leeuwen?
Yes.
What is the what was your week like?
You know, I was the tail end. You know, I've been telling the moving story for 3 weeks now because of moving into a new home. So that finally ended, and just trying to regroup and get back on a schedule here.
Okay.
So, dining out as often as I can to avoid cooking at the house, and I'm sure you know I love being in a restaurant. Do you like it?
Oh, you live for restaurants.
I do live for restaurants.
Michael has lunch out more than anyone I've ever met in my life.
Two lunches a day at least.
It is two lunches a day, and he doesn't. And he's not like to the manor born. He's not like it has to be the Ivy or anything like that. He knows the best little diners and pie places and all this. I always go to you for the great greasy spoon stuff.
Do you have anything in your kitchen?
I have very little.
No, it's like filled with sweaters. Your oven has sweaters.
Storage.
And they're delicious. Yeah. They are. Yeah.
So in a pinch. Yeah, they'll do.
So okay. So no, I do like to eat out. I've had some. I had an interesting experience today, but I'd like to hear yours first.
Yes, but you know, before I say that too, I don't think we acknowledged the fact that our guest Donna McKechnie is not on the program today. Right?
No, she's not. She's actually here, but she's bound and gagged.
She is in. She is at.
All I need is the music and the mirror.
Sorry.
That's all right.
That was that.
Donna,
those of you listening at home,
sings that much lower than she used to.
That was my one and only impersonation of a bound and gagged Donna McKechnie. Thank you. That's the extent of my impersonation. Go ahead.
Well, it kind of broke my heart a little bit, you know, being the birthday day, and I am such a big fan of her work, and she's such a lovely lady, and she called me very early this morning and had a last minute conflict come up with a concert rehearsal that she's doing with Kay Ballard and someone else on the East Coast, and it was the only day the director could do this rehearsal and the only day that the Kay and et cetera. I said, Donna, let's just make it simple. You'll come back, and thanks for ruining my day. It's my birthday. She said, oh, my God, what can you do? And we worked a few things out, and she'll be with us on the 27th of September.
So she will be back. Good.
But here, yes, restaurant. In a very famous restaurant here. Eric, pay attention now.
I'm sorry. I just
was nodding off of it.
Yeah.
His number was over, so, you know. Casa Vega.
Casa Vega? Yes. I've been watching them redo it on Flipping Out this season.
Yes. And you know, it's a piece of our history. Ken knows this, too. I mean, everybody goes there.
It's that lobster enchiladas, I hear, are the thing.
Oh, really?
That's what they eat all the time on Flipping Out.
Oh, well.
It doesn't matter where they are. It's always lobster. Every restaurant.
I don't even think that's on the menu now. But they may be eating lobster. Or so they're told they're eating lobster. You see? Yeah. But anyhow, in the restaurant, having dinner with a friend, and in walks a client of mine. My friend says, oh, Michael, there's Alan Thick. I said, oh, God, really? And I love Alan. I really do. And I said, well, I guess I better wave. So I waved across the restaurant. He came over to the table. He sat down. He said, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, you know, and you're eating. And I said, well, what are you doing here? And where's your wife? He said, well, she's out. And, you know, one of the games are on. And I come here and I watch the game. Well, he comes there and he asks for them to put the television out so that he can watch the game. And in the interim, we continued this conversation at the table, and during that conversation, he began to take food off of my plate and eat it.
No way.
During the entire conversation. To the point where I had no food left on my plate. And I said to him, before this got to the empty, I said, Alan, can I buy you a little dinner? He said, no, I'm full.
I've already eaten. Thank
you. I've already eaten.
No, I'm
thank
good.
You.
Yeah. Thanks. How about you?
That's my restaurant story.
And in 9 lobster enchiladas, he ate that.
Yes, he did.
My favorite restaurant story doesn't involve me. I mean, I had an embarrassing episode in a restaurant with, it wasn't me, it was this poor waitress who came out of the bathroom with a tile comet. For those of you who don't know what a tile comet is, it's when toilet paper is stuck to your shoe when you're coming out of the bathroom.
Oh, it's a good look.
And you could be David Niven with Brigitte Bardot on your arm. If you have toilet paper stuck to your shoe,
it's over.
You're Jerry Lewis.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Lady. So, but the most embarrassing thing did not involve me. It was Cassie Harlow from Chicago. She worked as a waitress. Eric, have you ever waited tables?
You know what? I haven't.
You haven't had
No, and okay. But I'm hoping to.
Okay. And they said he was the fool to dream. But the you know, I've waited tables, Kim, you've waited tables.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the kitchen, a cherry tomato falls off someone's salad, you pop it in your mouth. A French fry falls off a plate, you eat it. You're not eating their food, you're cleaning it up, whatever.
Sure.
So she goes out to the table with French onion soup au gratin. She sets it in front of the guy, and the guy says, "How was it?" And she says, "What?" And he reaches up and takes the melted cheese out of her mouth that is still connected to the crock of soup that she has just sat in front
of. We should be clear. This was not at Casa Vega, just in case anyone's listening.
This was not at Casa Vega. No,
this was in Chicago.
This was at a restaurant in Chicago.
Yes.
Would you care to name it?
That I can't name.
Called the Lazy O'Brien.
But I could say it rhymes with tarred cock. We could say that,
oh,
right?
Wow.
Oh.
What?
What?
No, like
me?
A rooster.
You
like
don't
a
to,
rooster.
You don't have to talk dirty. We were just asking the name of the restaurant.
No, no, jeez, like a rooster. No. I couldn't think of a really quick rhyme
about
for
rock?
Hard
well,
rock.
Apparently not.
It rhymes with hard rock. See, that was the whole thing.
Now
I've
well,
said it.
You see,
now
I'm a natural blonde.
Are we glad he cleared that up?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, what is the name of this show? I'm very unclear about what program I'm on.
State of the Farts.
Our arts.
I'm so sorry.
Thank you.
With the song
so
that we
sorry.
Started it off with.
It's
oh,
true.
Okay.
I'm so glad Donna McKechnie's not here.
All right. We'll stop. We'll start talking about roosters, tarred and otherwise.
Oy.
And we'll start talking to Eric about his work and his history.
That's about it, actually.
Is that all you got?
Tarred cock. That's actually that's what? About my career summed up in two words.
Tarred cock.
Oh,
good Lord. Obvious all right.
We're
off and running.
We are. Three okay. years starring as Bob Gaudio. Is that how you say it, Eric? Bob Gaudio?
Yeah, Bob Gaudio, yeah.
Yeah, in the Tony and Grammy Award-winning Jersey Boys as part of the Los Angeles, San Francisco, and First National Tour in Las Vegas companies.
Yes.
And Goodnight. Other credits. Gossip Girl. How was that? Such a big
bizarre
show.
Because I admittedly watched the show.
Yeah,
you know,
so
just,
do I. It's
I
okay.
Do you?
I do.
Why would you? Ew, you're disgusting. Why would you watch Gossip Girl?
Every once in a while, same reason you do.
Who said I watched? No. See, here the thing. It was one of those things where I watched the show when I was on the road because it sort of reminded me of home. Like I felt like I knew those people. I grew up with those Upper East Side kids.
Right.
So I knew these characters, and I just became addicted to the show. And all of a sudden, I was cast on it, interacting with all of them. It felt like I was on, like, the Gossip Girl ride at Universal Studios
right.
because
yes.
you were interacting with people that you knew as the... It was the weirdest thing.
Right.
Because I didn't meet them beforehand. It was a couple-episode arc. So it wasn't like I wasn't a big new cast member that got to work and know the people. I just was there for the various weeks that I was there.
Right.
And it was bizarre. I was looking in the eyes of, you know, Penn Badgley, who plays Dan Humphrey on the show, and he was talking to me like, "Hey, dude, I'm Penn." But I'm like, "No, you're not. You're Dan." What do you think? It's like, you know, it's like Santa Claus being ruined.
So it was sort of a hybrid. It sounds like of a e-ride at Universal, but also reality television.
It was. It was very odd. Yeah. But you know, what's funny is that my mother is still addicted to the show.
Yeah.
It was very upsetting when she saw her son on the show. She's like, "Why is my son on my show?" It was she felt it was like an intrusion on her program.
Wow, that's interesting.
I have therapy at 6, by the way, so I have to.
Well, you don't need therapy because she's right here with us.
Oh, good Lord.
Mrs.
Bergen. She is. She's arriving tomorrow, actually.
Wow, well, of course.
Yeah, she's coming in for the Magic Castle.
Oh, the Magic Castle.
Yeah.
15th of September.
That's right.
His debut here in Los Angeles, and I'll be there.
Oh, are you coming?
Because I'm going to be reviewing the show.
Oh, good Lord. You had to tell me that. Well, here I can preview it. It's fantastic.
Oh, really? In a word?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's going to be fun. I just had rehearsal this afternoon with the band, and it's being led by television's own Michael Orland, who I believe you know.
Oh, good friend. He was on the show last week.
We had him last week. Yeah.
He's very good. Very Jewish.
Funny.
Oh,
man.
He's funny.
Like stupid funny.
Stupid funny. Yeah.
Oh, you didn't hear that episode? It's like the one episode Kim has missed. Guys. Funny man.
No, he's funny. And he's been practicing the piano, so that's good. So he's going to be good on Wednesday. And no, it's great. We're doing, you know, my goal was to try to bring back a little bit of what Sammy was doing at the Coconut Grove or going to see Sinatra at the Sands. Not so much in what the songs that they were singing. I'm not going to try to be Bublé or anything like that,
right.
But to bring back that atmosphere so it's not cabaret. You know, I'm not sitting there singing, and then one day I looked out and then I sing, you know, Being Alive. It's not like that. It's much more fun, a party atmosphere. It's a three-piece jazz combo behind me.
It sounds, I mean, If it's that track of, is any indicative, it sounds very up, very, you know.
Exactly. It's party.
Yeah, I'm party you
limiting
host.
The ballads. Yeah. And it's great. We put together some really fantastic arrangements. Steve Orich did some of the arrangements. Steve did
love
the arrangements
Steve, of course.
For Jersey Boys.
It's a good friend.
And it's going to be great. It's just fun. It's and that room at the Magic Castle is just a blast because it's never really been used for. They just started this cabaret thing there recently.
Which room are you in?
It's the Inner Circle. It's downstairs.
Oh, yeah, it's downstairs, yes.
And it's converted, no matter what's going on. I've seen the room in many different formats, and it's great because, you know, to join the Magic Castle, you either have to be a member and pay the $1.6 million a year fee,
right.
And then or you have to be invited by a member, and
right.
This, for that night, gets you into the castle as if you were a member. So if you come early, you can have dinner, you can come to the castle, and you don't even have to stay for me. But I'll get your money.
But they can experience the whole thing. Like
you
if they go to see
the
you, they
castle.
Can go to the satellite rooms. Because we were there recently as a guest of Dan Frischman, who's a great friend of Seaglass, who's a member there.
Yes.
And didn't Nita Whitaker play there recently?
Nita did.
Nita had a gig there.
Yeah.
And she was down in that same room, and she said it was a blast.
It's such a fun room, and it's really developing an audience. And it's fun because, you know, you have to dress up. You have to be in a suit and tie.
Yeah, it's old school.
Which I miss. Because I have a nightclub here.
Yes, of course.
Yeah,
yes.
Sterling's upstairs of the
I was told not to come back to, unfortunately.
Pardon?
Michael,
I just wanted to scare you on live radio.
Of course you would. Michael, of course you would be the one who would really care about ties and
jackets.
Well,
I would.
Because you
I
were
do.
Dressed in a tuxedo
thing.
At 7.
Yeah. Well, you
look,
know
you're
my...
Look, he's the only one dressed here. And I mean that literally.
I'm
naked.
A radio star, Eric. I'm a radio
Kim
star.
Kim does everything topless.
Oh, yes.
Everything.
Oh, I know. I hear. I've heard
the
stories.
It's kind of cold in here.
Could you just get them off the desk, Kim? Thank you.
Sorry.
It's supporting me.
Cannot take her anywhere, right?
Well, now no one's going to come to the castle.
So, Eric, let me ask you a question. Now, this is your debut in cabaret?
No. It's my first time bringing the club act to L.A. I did a couple performances in Las Vegas at the Liberace Museum, which is where that CD was recorded.
Yeah. What was that like sitting there playing Liberace's piano? Because I saw that in a video.
It's really fun. Well, the Liberace Museum, if any of you are listening in Las Vegas or going to Las Vegas anytime before October 17th, please visit the Liberace Museum because they've just announced their closing on October 17th.
Oh, really?
17th, and it's
an
really,
institutional piece of Las Vegas.
It's been there for
closing.
30 years.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a hard thing to keep the arts alive in Las Vegas, a town that is really relies on tourism and extra cash lying around.
Right.
And it's really having trouble, so they have to close. And I think it'll come back later on in a different format. But, you know, this was the place that all of us show kids that were out there, either in Jersey Boys or Phantom or Mamma Mia or Lion King, it's where we went to when we weren't doing the show. We would do other shows there. There was a composer showcase there that was led by Keith Thompson, the musical director of Jersey Boys, who we'd get all the local composers in town and put together their shows. It was really a home away from home for all of the show kids. And it was the only room of its kind. It was the only showroom like that. It's off the strip. And not to mention all of Liberace's great artifacts that were there to watch. And you got to play Liberace's piano, which is entirely mirrored and it looks like a big giant disco ball. So when you play the little section... I'm moving my hands as if we're on television, but the little section in front of your hands, you know, where the name of the piano company would be.
Right. It's Steinway.
Yes. It's entirely mirrored, so you see your hands playing, and it's the weirdest. It was like a bad acid trip, a really bad gay acid trip, is what it was. But it was the museum is incredible. It's just a fantastic place, and I'm thrilled that I think this is the first album ever recorded live at the Liberace Museum.
Really?
And possibly the last. I know.
So that would be something distinctive if it's going to go out. You'd have that distinction, right?
I'm very proud to say that I was a big part of fundraising there and a big part of the arts in that museum, and they donate a lot of money. The Liberace Foundation is all about scholarships for music education and making sure kids in Las Vegas and all over the place get funding for arts education. So we need to keep that alive, especially in a city like Las Vegas that isn't thought of as a real town. You know, people forget that there's a life off the strip.
There's a lot of life off that strip.
Yeah.
There's all the families that live and work there, and everyone thinks that everything ends right at the strip.
And what a wonderful place to live, and it's just a great place to visit all over. So I try to do as much for places like that as I can.
Well, and you did Jersey Boys, of course, for 3 years.
Yeah, I did.
So you really became a a citizen of the
city. I did. I have a Nevada. Well, you know what? I learned to drive there because I grew up in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
So I didn't have a driver's license until I got out to Vegas, and I learned to drive. I still have a Nevada driver's license, which is frightening. But, Jersey Boys there was, it was such the perfect show for Las Vegas.
Sure.
I mean, we really became local favorites there, and it was great. I mean, aside from the local celebrity-ness of it all, it really felt like a real home, a real place for that show to live and breathe forever. And it's still going strong out there. And
I think it's kind of had a life everywhere it sits down.
It really has had a life everywhere. I mean, it's been, I mean, there's performances in my living room nightly. I mean, it's everywhere. It's literally everywhere.
So that's what that noise was.
Yeah. Yeah.
My friend Greg Burton is actually head of animation for the Broadway production. For you know, the animation of the set pieces and everything. So he's been with that for years.
Now, is there a chance you might do the Broadway production?
I know
you did the U.S. national tour.
We did the tour
and the
first.
Los Angeles run,
right?
Of course, part of the tour.
That was part of the tour. Yeah. Well, not right now. I mean, I moved here. I moved here as in the beginning of January, and there was a possibility of doing the Broadway production a while back, and it was just sort of the beginning. Talk of it, and it ended up being that Vegas worked out better. I mean, it was just a more lucrative opportunity at that moment.
Right.
And what fun to say you played Las Vegas.
And with, you know, their shows, a musical, a Broadway musical is, you know, good anywhere. If it's made it to Broadway and it's successful, it's a good musical, but there are certain ones that are just suited for Vegas type venues and the grandeur that is Las Vegas. And Jersey Boys is just dead on.
It was dead on. It was interesting because Jersey Boys is really a great play inside the musical entertainment. There's a wonderful book by Marshall Rickman and Rick Ellis in there that's just fantastic and not only tells the story extremely well, but is hilarious. I mean, it's hilarious and it's heartwarming and everyone connects to it. And I think the biggest accolade that you can give to Jersey Boys is that people come in expecting a jukebox musical and wanting a juke. They're coming in for light entertainment, right. And they leave, you know, using up two boxes of Kleenex. And the fact that could happen in a town where, you know, they're just excited to see Charo and topless dancers, you know, I think speaks to its universal interest.
Just provided that Charo is not the topless dancer, because that would be a little unsettling.
Oh. I definitely had a different nightmare. I apologize.
That's what that noise was.
That's what that noise was.
Exactly.
Oh, what a night indeed.
Exactly.
No, but Jersey Boys was great fun, and I think anyone who sees the show, it touches their lives. And, you know, I did it for 3 years every single night, and it's made a huge impact.
Hey, did you ever get tired of doing it? I mean, seriously.
I honestly didn't. I think there was about a week where my first summer in Las Vegas, where it was just so hot that it seeped indoors that you felt your fingernails melting off. That was not good, but I have to say that I never, ever got sick of it. I mean, it was just nonstop rock concert fun every night. It was just the best.
Well, and you know, it's not the first time that Los Angeles has seen you in Jersey Boys. They also saw Eric in White Christmas at the Fantasia Theater, and a funny thing happened on the way to the Forum for Reprise, our series here in Los Angeles.
I like to call it Adult Theater Camp at Reprise.
There you go.
Well, because, you know, you get there in rehearsal, you think your first rehearsal, you're supposed to have a meet and greet and things like that.
Right.
You don't. You walk in, you're like, we have 2 weeks, and go.
Exactly.
And that's it.
Exactly.
But it's great there.
But excuse me one second, I don't think we hit on this, and I want to make sure that we do hit on this to give the details of Eric's upcoming performance. It's at the Inner Circle at the Magic Castle. For those of you who don't know, it's 7001 Franklin Avenue in Hollywood. And that is Wednesday night at 8. Doors open at 6:30. Tickets are on sale. $15 for Magic Castle members and $25 for guests. And VIP seating available for $50. And they can make their reservations at boxoffice@magiccastle.com or by calling 323-851-3313, extension 303. That's a lot of threes, so I'll give it to you again. 323-851-3313, extension 303. Please remember, attire at the Magic Castle requires jackets and ties for gentlemen and absolutely no denim. So I just wanted to make sure we got all those
And more out. As important as everything you just said, that $50 also gets you some personal time with Eric Bergen.
Now that sounds dirty. I should also let you know.
I've got this crick in my neck. It's a knot. You know, it's just.
We got to do our
personal time
calendar.
With my mother.
That's the only voice I do.
Stay with us, Eric. Hold on.
Stay with us, Eric. We got to You're not going anywhere.
Oh, sure.
We have to do our arts calendar. So, Michael, do you want to kick off our arts calendar?
Still unforgettable, 8-time Grammy Award-winning singer Natalie Cole has made an impact more illustrious than any other female artist from the 1970s. Cole, the daughter of crooner Nat King Cole and former Duke Ellington orchestra singer Maria Cole, quickly established herself as a star with hits like This Will Be and Inseparable. She enjoyed even greater success, adding her signature pop-flavored soul interpretations of everything from Bruce Springsteen's Pink Cadillac to the now classic duet with her father's own classic rendition of When I Fall in Love. Don't miss Natalie Cole at the Lancaster Performing Arts Center in Lancaster, California, Saturday, September 18th.
I'm a huge fan of Bruce Springsteen. Are you? I love Bruce.
Me and Dear Abby.
He's just the best.
Yes.
The Sardano Dance Theater and Jennifer Tipton will present Rain Coloring Forest at Red Cat at the Walt Disney Concert Hall, downtown Los Angeles, September 16th through 19th. Evocative movement and music emanate from a lush visual environment in this world premiere performance created during a Red Cat residency by legendary Indonesian visionary Sardano W. Kusumo. Sterling, you give me these reads.
And I do. And I
might as well.
Seashell.
He messed up Springsteen. It wasn't like it was going to be any easier.
I know. And he's giving me Chinese algebra here. And his dancers, in collaboration with artist and lighting designer Jennifer Tipton, composer David Rosenboom, and video animation artist Maureen Shellwood.
Lovely.
You know, you can pre-tape those.
This is pre-taped.
Oh, sorry.
That's how bad I am.
In Ethel Merman's Broadway, Rita McKenzie recreates her uncanny award-winning portrayal of Ethel Merman, the queen of the Broadway musical. The show is packed with more than 20 trademark Merman songs, including I Got Rhythm, There's No Business Like Show Business, Everything's Coming Up Roses, and many more. McKenzie weaves Merman's larger-than-life story with her signature tunes to create a spectacular evening at the Laguna Playhouse in Laguna Beach, California, now through September 19th.
For further information about any productions and or events mentioned in today's State of the Arts live calendar, visit us during the week at stateoftheartsla.com. That's stateoftheartsla.com. And we also suggest you drop in at performingartslive.com, which sponsors our calendar here, where you can search for Southern California events in several different categories happening every day of the week. Now, Michael, before we talk to Kim, I would like to ask you about Dana Shaw's debut at Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's.
Where Eric Bergen is not debuting his act. Okay, so let me talk.
I asked him if he was invited. And he said,
of course. It's a standing invitation.
Oh. He showed up, but he wasn't wearing a jacket, so he sold the F off.
Topless. topless again.
And in denim.
I went to a topless synagogue once. I went to a topless synagogue once, yeah.
What?
No skull caps.
What?
Oh. Lady.
Bada bing.
Good night.
There you go.
Okay.
No, we had a wonderful, wonderful sold-out show. We've been doing amazing there for 4 years. We've been there, Eric. 4 years, right? We're the number one club in town. And, or I like to say so. Let me put it that way.
I should call the Magic Castle. Yeah.
We're the number one club in town, except those other clubs that we're promoting.
Dana Shaw, musical theater star, most recently starred with Marsha Wallace and Sally Struthers in the Rodgers and Hammerstein production of Cinderella out at Cabrillo Music Theater. She played one of the stepdaughters. Kim, you saw that. You took James Denton's children there for a little birthday party.
Yeah.
And yeah.
You made it sound like she absconded with them.
Yeah.
You took James Denton's children against their will to see an evil stepwoman. Yeah. I'm sorry.
You did. No, she just, Marsha was in. There was a lot of cast members from that show in last night. It was a big high energy. And I must say, for a young woman in her early 20s, this girl gave a knockout performance like she'd been doing it for 10 years. And it was called How to Succeed in Showbiz While Really Trying.
You see how she did that?
Yeah. Smart little twist on words.
Right? I like.
Do you get it? Because that's a reference to.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Her next show, you should see it. Goodbye, Dolly.
Yeah.
It's a new thing.
Or Hilarious Girl.
Right.
With Leah Michele? Please.
Well,
I don't know.
You know, I went to summer camp with Leah Michele.
You did?
I did. She's quite talented.
Of course she's talented.
I knew her when she was Leah Sarfati.
Really?
Ooh. Did I just cause... Should we call Perez Hilton? Is that drama?
But how do you spell that last name?
S-A-R-F-A-T-I.
Oh, there's no R in the F-A-T-I.
Sarfarty. No.
No.
That would be not attractive.
I thought that's
And you
what
wonder
you
why
said,
she
really.
Changed that name. rolls off the tongue like a razor.
I don't mean Dana Shaw, you were amazing last night if you're listening, and thank you for bringing in such a beautiful show. Your audience certainly gave you an amazing standing ovation at the end of the evening, and you well deserved it. But back to Lea Michele.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that, you know, I love her, I really do, and I love Glee, but the audition of a lifetime on television.
You can't use that as because the truth of the matter is, when, no matter who you are, I don't, you know, if you are Barbra Streisand or Lady Gaga or me, who's so similar to both.
And you've often been called a hybrid of those two, haven't
Lady
you?
Lady Madonna Bergen.
Yeah.
And
we didn't plan that.
No. You know, I think she knew it was an audition. Everyone knew it was a, quote, audition.
You know what I'm talking about then, right?
At the Tonys, when she's saying, don't... Yeah,
I think it's a little too much.
But you know what? It's
face.
A live event with millions of people watching, or in the case of the Tony Awards, about three people watching. And it's not fair to judge based on that. I think if you look at what she does on Glee, that's a better thing to look at. I think a one-time performance when the world is watching, I think that's a little unfair.
But there's also the fact of you're doing a live performance that's being filmed for television, and those two worlds don't often go very well together. If you're performing in a theatrical venue and you have to project and you have to get to the back row and you're really
back
selling
room.
It. Well,
really?
Those are the theaters that you frequent, Michael.
That's my auditions.
But no, the thing is that you're a larger presence than you are when the camera is this far away. So I'm sure it could read that way. I mean, my friend Ted, who did Death of a Salesman on Broadway with Brian Dennehy, he was not nuts about the Showtime film of the play because it's a play. It's not.
Award shows, live award shows, the sound is never good. It's just never good. I mean, if our careers were based off of what the soundboard feed sounded like, you know, none of us would have a career. So I think that she's an extremely talented girl. In my other opinion, there are some shows that should be put to rest. Funny Girl is one of them. It's time. It was done. It's did. It's been didn't. It's not. It's okay. It's like no one touch it. You know what I mean?
And what is Julie Stein doing right now?
I didn't know done, did it had that many syllables.
Well, you
done,
see.
Did it, do.
It's because I dropped out of high school and college.
Well,
and silence.
Eric, on that note.
Yes.
A former resident of Chicago is with us today, ladies and gentlemen, an actress.
Nice.
Who knew that I was even here?
Nice segue, Sterling. Yeah. I love that. Speaking of uneducated.
She is everything but that. She is an artistic director. She is a wonderful actress. And she is the head of Seaglass Theater. Paul,
yes,
you she work is the with this woman.
The artistic director of Seaglass Theater, and Kim also founded the Griffin Theater in Chicago, which is now in its 23rd year of producing.
Oh, God. What's 87? See, I went out of high school, too. Yeah. 1987.
So
23
years.
Yeah.
23 years of the Griffin Theater. And now she's artistic director of Seaglass Theater in town. Welcome, Kim. Thank
Kim
you
Kimberly
for
Van Leeuwen, ladies and gentlemen.
Us. And if you would be kind enough to tell the listeners a little about this wacky show that your company is doing.
Oh, we're doing this really
Sounds
great show.
Sounds magical.
Unfortunately, it's directed by somebody really bad. So.
Oh, nice. Kim, now it starts.
Yeah.
Going to my happy place.
Meow, 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 meow,
cast,
meow,
so.
Meow.
Yes.
We are doing a show called Of Grapes and Nuts, and it is a parody of Steinbeck's Grapes of Wrath and of Mice and Men.
Oh.
And it's supposed to be funny. So we're going for that. We're going for humor. And we've been having a great time with it. We're right now in Tech Week, and we open on Saturday the 18th.
Saturday the 18th?
Of September. And I tell them about the character?
I don't know. I think what's interesting about it, and I think this is an interesting point about it, is that you tell people you're doing a parody and they immediately think it's going to be a Carol Burnett take on this classic literature. But what's interesting about this play, the group, the Illegitimate Players have put it together, they combine the stories. They did it with Mendacity, Glass Mendacity, which was a Tennessee Williams spoof. And the same thing with this. Combining the two stories and the characters that result from combining Of Mice and Men with The Grapes of Wrath, and like Kim's character, which we don't have to go into too much detail, but tell them who your character is and the hybrid that that character is.
So I am playing Curly, which is a hybrid of in Mice and Men. That is Curly, who is the... what do you call him? The bat?
Evil.
The evil. The badass.
The evil ranch hand.
Yeah. And a mix of him and his wife.
And Curly's wife.
So I'm them two together.
So it's a very interesting costume.
I'm a hermaphrodite.
Let's just say it's a very interesting costume.
Oh, really? Well, you know, Paul, you have really a particular perspective on this because you were an actor in this play 20 years ago.
I was an actor in the first...
In Chicago.
In the first production.
And
yeah.
Had you seen him in the show?
No. I didn't know Paul that well in Chicago. I only saw you in Tony and Tina's.
Oh, that's
and
right.
And a couple bars, I think.
That's
right.
Which was a safe bet.
Is that the name of a play?
Yes, yeah. Yes. A couple of white guys sitting around getting stewed. I did it in Chicago, yes, in 1990, and presented it. One of the things that Kim has implemented in Seaglass is, you know, we read a ton of plays before we select them, and then we all come together and we sort of distill it down to five or six that we read collectively. And I presented Of Grapes and Nuts, and it was chosen. And it's really interesting to direct something that you were in 20 years ago. It's a fascinating story.
Did you find yourself comparing?
Not really, because I loved being in the first production, but it wasn't a perfect, it was a successful production, but it wasn't a perfect production by any means. And there were things even when I was doing it, I thought could be improved on. And the cast that we have, not only Kimberly,
that must dictate a lot of your direction as well. You're playing off of their strengths.
And you don't want to force something on somebody. You have to let them bring their own thing to it, and then you have to guide the ship, but you don't have to sort of, you know, insist on what's happening. I mean, how has the experience been for you, Kim? I mean, how much of a tyrant am I as
no,
a director?
You're not. And what was interesting, because Paul hasn't directed in a while, and so this was kind of him coming back to something that he remembered enjoying doing and stuff like that, and I think he was a little bit nervous at first, more so than like trying to recreate. And I said to him, when he said he would like to direct it, I said, you know, my biggest concern is that you're not going to try to recreate what you did 20 years ago. And he goes, I can't remember what I did 20 years ago.
You can't remember what he did yesterday, Kim.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, so I think that worry went away. And because, like you said, the actors...
Then my nurse came in and I was given my dinner.
Sure.
Which was pureed because I can no longer chew.
Do you have to know the Steinbeck novels well to get this?
Good point.
I always wonder about that with
parodies. It is very funny if you're not familiar with the source material. It is exponentially funnier if you know the source material.
Sure.
But the thing is that they're sort of like, wouldn't you say, Kim, having seen both the films, having read both, it's a parody of all of that style.
Yeah.
So it's just those John Ford films and the, you know, the glinty look into the horizon type thing.
Sure.
So it's just as much a parody of the film as the play, and especially, like, you look at Mice and Men, how many times has that been done? Three? It was the original with Lon Chaney and Burgess Meredith, and then there was Randy Quaid and...
Charo.
And Charo did it.
Yeah.
Joan Van Ark did a couple of them.
Yes. And she did the one-woman show.
Eric, Joan Van Ark. That's my impression.
What's that?
Joan Van Ark.
Oh.
Everything
it's a good thing
does.
This is radio. Like,
if you can't see what he's doing, he's duct-taped his ear to the back of his head.
That's not easy.
Go ahead.
All you Joan Van Ark fans out there, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we apologize for that.
Well, Donna McKechnie couldn't make it, but come on in, Joan. Come on in.
It's nice to be here.
Oh, God.
It's only next to Joan Rivers. I mean, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, sure, Edgar. Yeah. Missy. Looks. Missy's
okay.
Mizrahi.
Okay. All right, we gotta wrap up with Kim.
Well, I'm going to tell them where they can come and see if Grapes and Nuts.
No, but that's what I was going to say. I was going to ask Kim to do it, but you can do it if you want to.
Please, your voice is
She actually doesn't know.
Well, that it is.
I don't know where I am.
What the show is.
She's so drunk. I didn't want to say anything.
Slashed.
It's 4:30. That means at least 4.5 hours.
Sure.
That was the last show.
She was at Casa Vega.
That's right.
Casa Vega.
Oh, I should mention one more thing. Kim has a hysterical line in her bio, which is just, she says, Kim is delighted to be playing the power-hungry, maniacal control freak. To prepare for this role, she followed herself around for a year.
There you have it in a nutshell.
No uncertain terms, I might add. Well, Grapes and Nuts will be presented Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 4 p.m. Tickets priced at $20 are available for purchase online at Seaglass Theater, that's with an R-E, .org. The Little Victory Theater at the Victory Theater Center, which is where the show will be presented, is located at 3326 West Victory Boulevard, Burbank, California. Ample street parking is available, along with street parking in front of the theater and directly across the street at the Northwest Branch Library. And for directions, parking information, local dining options are also available at seaglasstheater.org.
And one more thing, too, for our listeners of State of the Arts, we're giving out a special discount code for this Sunday's performance, which is September 19th, the 4 o'clock production this Sunday. And if you go to the website that Michael mentioned, seaglasstheater.org, and use the discount code SGFRIEND, as in Seaglass Friend, but just SGFRIEND, you get a $15 ticket.
Wow.
Such a deal.
$5 off.
Such a deal.
There you go.
And you can talk with Paul Stroli, right?
Yes, who will be working concessions.
Now, who's that? That's
I just saw the name there.
Oh.
He's only a $15 guy, not a $50 guy.
I was going to say,
a little bit on the low end.
He does not give massages.
Well, no, but I have not to say 15. That for the law.
All right, the initiation.
We have to hear your nightmare theatrical embarrassment, worst thing happened to you on stage story. Whichever one of you would like to kick it off. Eric, you can start. Kim, you can start.
He's milling.
You know, my story is unfortunately not funny. It's just not good. I was doing a production of production. I was doing Jersey Boys here in L.A., and the big trap door that's at the front of the stage that brings up all four of us and the mics and everything like that opened before it was supposed to when I was on it. And I fell in. I fell and sort of pulled myself out of it and hit the stage and hit my back. And I mean, it was not good. The unfunny part is that I was, you know, carried out on a stretcher and everything. Okay, laugh now. Someone laugh, because it's uncomfortable here.
So wait a minute.
Were you still singing on the stretcher?
Yes, I was. And but it was sad. It was in the audience. It was like Gary Marshall, the producer of Dreamgirls. You know, just like no one. And it was that's what I remember thinking was not, oh, God, I hope I can walk again, but, oh, God, what about that audition? I mean, it was, that's sort of my unfortunate.
See, now, that's an actor mentality, though. That's the actor mentality. He's not so concerned with the vertebra in his back.
Not so much.
Gary Marshall is here.
Well, hello. But, you know, I think the scariest part was that I don't remember falling. What I do remember is 2,500 people going, ooh, which could make you never want to set foot on a stage again.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now I only play 99-seat theaters, just for that reason.
With no trapdoors.
Yeah. You know,
that's why I'm here in Los Angeles.
It's kind of funny, because Kim's best, most embarrassing thing that happened on stage was she was actually attending a production of Jersey Boys, and she rigged the trapdoor. And
sorry.
Oh, I was wondering what that was.
I wanted to see what would happen.
What happens if I press the red button?
This button just says, ha-ha, Gary Marshall. What's that mean?
But Eric, there must be something. I mean, that was truly, that's a devastating thing.
I think
something
my funniest story is that in back in summer camp, I was doing a production of Anything Goes where I played the purser. And I was very new to the theater.
Right.
Like the Twitter. And as my father says. And there was a scene at the very end where one of the characters had brought a dog with her on the boat, and she's lost the dog over the course of the play, and I go and find the dog at the very end. The cue was I had to walk off stage and go get the dog, who was being held by a stage manager, And I then bring it on. Now, this was the invited dress rehearsal for like the other camp kids and parents and the staff members and blah, blah, blah. But I had a very intense director. Because this was at Stage Door Manor, that intense summer theater camp.
Yes, yes.
And I go off stage, and the stage manager is nowhere to be found, but the dog's kennel is open. We were using a live dog. The dog's kennel thing was open. So I'm thinking, oh my God, the dog got out. So instead of thinking, the show must go on, I'm going to go on and create a line that says, we found your dog, and it's in the other room. You know, I could have said anything. What I said, I walked out on stage, and I looked out into the audience, and I raised my hand, and I turned to Michael, the director, who was sitting somewhere in the audience, and said, Michael, I can't find the dog. This is mid-performance. My mother still teases me about that. Remember when you didn't we didn't bring the dog on stage? I'm like,
yes, I can't find the dog.
Yeah. And that story still haunts me.
And
Michael,
you raised your hand.
Well, I raised my hand because obviously I didn't think they would notice me as the one character on stage not acting. So I've learned everything from that point on is to just continue with the show as much as possible.
Oh, my.
Okay, so, all right, so, Kim, what happened to you? Did,
happened?
Did you drop a dog through a trap door?
Honey, I was going to say.
You dropped the dog in a stage?
All these doors, you know, how do I... Okay, The one that comes to mind immediately, we had just started with the Griffin Theater in Chicago, and we were doing this show called Mrs. California. And what it is it's a show about these women in the 50s, and they're doing this competition, Mrs. California, and it's the time when women were, during the war, were helping out and everything, and then they're forced back into these roles of being the perfect housewife and stuff like that, so there's the drama in there. And we had these four identical sets with the old-fashioned stoves and refrigerators and everything. And we had to do all the different competitions. Well, one of the competitions is you had to give a little speech. And for my particular one, I had to come out on stage. I'm by myself. Nobody else is out there, so nobody to help you out at all. And I'm supposed to give this speech about something that I did. And I can't even remember what the speech was, but it's supposed to go like this. And then I went... And so it's supposed to go like that, really, really fast. And just, right?
How was that again, Kim?
And so I go...
And that's different from you, how?
Yeah. Where's the story part of this?
Okay, I'm done. So I take my deep breath and I get ready and I'm like... And totally blank. Totally blank. And I'm like... Looking around, raising my hand, nobody's there to answer.
What's the raise
my hand? I didn't
sounded like Joan Rivers.
But I was like looking around, going, "Oh my God!" And I'm smiling and all.
She's doing Joan Rivers.
And my face, you could, you know, when you're turning bright red, and my face was on fire, and I'm just like, just smiling and smiling and smiling.
And looking around.
And looking around, and all of a sudden I went, "The end," and I walked off stage. This was professional, but Gary Marshall wasn't in the audience.
Oh,
like,
you see?
The end.
The end. I couldn't think of anything else. The end.
That is funny. That is funny.
I have to say, though, and I'm going to try to encapsulate it, the funniest thing ever to this is what happened to Michael Sterling. What he had, you said this on like our one of our earlier shows, Michael. You had prepared this musical piece for this musical audition, and
you bring that up on my birthday.
What song had you prepared?
I had prepared Dance at the Gym.
Prepared
from West Side Story.
Dance at the Gym.
Right, that's right.
So he prepares.
Obviously, he's done it too.
Prepares the whole thing. He walks into his audition with his record player.
The vinyl kind.
The vinyl kind.
I was very young.
Because he's going to carry the record player in. He goes in, and he's like...
But you're missing one part. It was choreographed for me by a neighborhood friend.
Sure.
Very heavy-set young girl who tap danced.
Oh, sure. That's right. So,
was a tap version of Dance at the Gym.
No.
Okay, so walks in with the record player and says, is there an outlet? Is there anywhere I could plug? No, there's no outlet. There's nowhere you could plug.
No outlet.
So he's got no audition, and they say, well, do you know Anchors Away? Okay?
He raises his hand.
He says, yes. He raises his hand. He knows Anchors Away. Michael, please tell them what you did.
I proceeded. I said, hit it to the accompanist. Yes. This is in a 3,000-seat theater in the round in Santa Monica, the Santa Monica Civic Auditorium. You remember that theater when it was in the round. And I said, hit it, and I proceeded. The only thing I could do, what do you do to anchors away? Right. You kick. You do high kicks.
Oh, no.
I high kicked for a minute and a half.
He high kicked.
That's all I knew. Do you think my routine would have fixed that?
Was there no singing involved in this?
No.
This was
no singing.
This was a dance combo
audition.
This
was a dance combo.
Wow.
Yeah, I had actually worked at the theater before, though, thank God. And I got the job, strangely enough, even with that audition. But it was
if you can kick
not,
that high for
you got the job.
You kick the job.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Then
okay. We have to wrap it up because I do want to fit in so a little more of Eric's Eric. The next track we're going to play
the
is
Vegas
Everything
Sessions.
All Right. Is that
yeah, absolutely. That's one of the songs from the album.
We will play that on our way out. But before we sign, first of all, thank you, Eric. Thank you, Kim, for being
indeed,
with us. Happy birthday, Mr.
Happy
Sterling.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Next week, Emmy and Grammy Award winner Charles Fox will be our guest, best known for writing the theme songs to Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, Love American Style, and Roberta Flack's hit
Killing
pop song,
Softly.
Killing Me Softly,
yes.
One of my mother's favorite songs, I should say. And this is, we will see you all next week, but please give a listen to Eric Bergen on this next track from his CD, The Vegas Sessions.